What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right now.
Welcome to Stocks and Jocks. Take it away, Chief.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe, Jimmy on the board. S&P futures down 35, NASDAQ futures down 126. This is up from the open last night, like we've sure come to believe. Every time something changes, we seem to have we buy the dip like pretty much immediately, which we sure as hell have this morning. So I guess that's good. Obviously, we have some sort of a resumption of war in the Strait, at least, although Trump has been redoing his threats on, kill every bridge, kill every power plant, whatever. He's no more Mr. Nice Guy. I don't know if anybody ever would consider him that, but that would be him. But last night, we'll see if this... We've had records every day, pretty much, of the last 3 days or so. As the Fed continues, who's the buyer last night? Is it the Fed? Is it just by the dippers? Is it people from the White House? I mean, who the hell knows? But so now American Airlines is down 3% because they dismissed the United Mega merger.
Well, you didn't hear the other. Spirit is now going to the government. Hey, we're out of Florida. We're running out of money. We need your help.
Well. Competition or lack thereof in the airline business has always been something that's interesting because, plus, the Fed does their best to grab taxes from those guys everywhere they go. So they're certainly part of the problem. Overnight stays for planes and landing fees and everything else are to the moon. I don't know that they're warranted or not.
They're claiming it's the jet fuel for Spirit.
Well, the jet fuel... I've heard that they might run out in Europe in 6 weeks if the Strait blockade continues. This is really crazy stuff. I mean, I don't know what... we got people fighting religion. We've got... Why do we have to open up all this stuff on all these fronts? Meanwhile, we'll pour money into the system. I don't know. I was... But sometimes you gotta go to the little to find the positive. And just this weekend, I was... sort of inundated on News Radio 78. They have some great stories, but boy, if you drive around a lot, you hear them a bunch of times. But evidently, there's a we have who? Oh, they have a. Evidently, we have 6,500 contract employees at Midway. It sure as hell seems like a lot, and I'm not exactly sure what they do. But anyway, they're all making. They can't all be, but there's a minimum wage there. It's now $15 an hour. Anyway, they just raised these people to 17. These people, since I don't know what the hell they do. With the potential, well, they're going to go to 18 next year. And after that, it's going to go up with the CPI. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, I have some issues with this. And well, not that anybody cares. The idea of somebody being raised to $17 an hour. Well, one little trick, of course, I'm talking about years ago. There's 2,080 hours in the year normally with a regular vacation and everything else. So whatever it is, you can multiply the dollars per hour roughly by 2,000. That's assuming people work 40 hours a week, which might be something different these days. But assuming that... That's why when $20 an hour is just figure $40,000 a year, roughly, Well, 17 is 34. This is after a raise. I'm assuming these people do something. I don't know what contract people do. I'm assuming it's the lower level employee jobs, you know, janitoring and cleaning and those kinds of things, but I honestly don't know. But say it is, it's 34 grand a year. And it's $17 an hour, going to 18 and then the CPI after that. Well, first of all, I don't know who is negotiating these agreements. And I don't know what else you could use. But anybody who thinks that the CPI over the last 25 years has kept pace with any sense of inflation, I mean, I don't know what you're reading or what you're drinking or what you're smoking.
Well, it is 420 today.
Yeah, well, we got that going for us. Maybe we'll smell even more dope on the street than we normally do.
You probably will. Well, people don't know 420 was the police call for someone smoking the wacky tobacco.
Well, now stuff even wackier because it's stronger.
And legal.
Yeah, and legal. It's I guess we keep everybody watching football and getting high. It's all right. Anyway, so then yesterday Audrey and I go to breakfast, which we sort of do on Sunday. And we go with this Hispanic place. Because the people, it was this kind of crummy diner, and all of a sudden this Hispanic family took it over. And now it's really good. And all of a sudden they're getting crowds. We actually had to wait yesterday. Nobody goes there anymore. It's too crowded, according to Yogi. Anyway, so we go in and, you know, food is delicious. But, you know, your regular, you know, skillet or something unusual, eggs benedict or something, is like $17. So you sit there and you go, okay, then, let's see. An omelet without coffee is the same price as an hour's work. That's not good, Jimmy. So if you take your wife and two kids, it's over half a day's work without coffee, without tax, without tip. Anybody think that's okay? Just saying.
Nope.
In the 34 grand we're talking about, when the people at Pullman made, I think when I was there, people on the line made maybe $17 an hour, maybe 18, somewhere in there. So say they made 34, 35 grand a year. Well, a nice car was 3,500. A Notre Dame education was, let's say, 4,000. In a house, I'm going to say, was 45-ish. So now the 34,000 that everybody's just happy they got this raise to, a nice car is, what, 45-50. I guess you can get something cheaper, but the median price is, what, 52 or something?
Somewhere around there,
yeah.
Yes.
A Notre Dame education's 75, so it's 2 years' pay. And, whatever the third one was, you're not even in the same planet. And yet, we have people that swear by these numbers, and I really don't, we don't even begin to get it. I don't know what their math is like, or their, maybe they're just too young, or they don't have any memory or something. I don't know, but all this stuff is on paper. I mean, it's pretty bizarre. I mean, a house is now what, 410? So it's
higher than that, but I'm sure Audrey could let us know later on.
What is that? It's 10 years pay. 12 years pay. Rather than 1.5 or 2. Now that's a difference, don't you think?
Yes.
Everybody keeps saying how great everybody's doing. I don't even get what manner of, and I don't know how people believe them. I don't know which is worse, the fact that somebody's, you know, willing to tell you that, or whether you're willing to believe it. I honestly don't know which is worse. It's like our politicians. You don't know how, which would you rather have, being stealing or so dumb that I don't realize how easy it is for them to steal. I don't know which is the worst, but what do you think? What's the worst? I mean, it's the craziest thing. How to even have this debate? You know, I don't get it, but. Well, here, I'll go to the national debt clock, and we'll look at the median price of a new home. This guy's got all this stuff. By the way, we're up to $39 trillion, so in 100 days, we'll be over $40 trillion in debt. That's a little thing we can lob out there. But don't worry, everything's fine.
I'm the king of debt.
Yeah, he's the king of debt. And, you know, we've got a guy who's in office somehow thinking, telling people how great this all is. I don't really get it, but that's what we're doing. So anyway, it looks like we have, I don't know, I can't move this dumb thing over, but I don't know why that is. But I'm going to say the median housing price is probably 410. And I don't quite know how we got there, but we did. So there. What do you make of all this? I mean, there's nothing you really do about it. It's just there. And I don't know what. But we have this idea that we have this money, and we don't. We have all kinds of crazy ideas, and I don't quite understand what we're doing. But the market's going up, so I guess it's okay, right?
Of course.
So I don't know. Anyway, but that's the situation. But obviously, it is good for the market. And by the way, we have, you know, I have people that are obviously very happy with all this, making dough, and they're my clients, so I'm happy for them. But I always worry when this stuff happens, when it doesn't seem to make sense. Here we go. Median new home now, 412.
It's 356.
According to these guys, it's 412.
Well,
median,
AI.
Not average, median.
No, there's AI a difference. Said the median home is about this. This was from Zillow in January of this year. Some people say it's as high as 415.
All right, these guys are picking up 412. And they have median new home in 2000, 163. All right, so what is that?
Or as high as 522,200.
I don't know if that's...
This is AI.
Well, God, it must be good then, right? Let's see. 412 divided by 163 is 2.53. Now, I'm going to say that I'll check this. I don't have to. I'm going to say that. What do you suppose that is? What do you suppose the CPI is from 2000?
No idea.
What would your guess be?
The CPI. I really don't have an idea.
I don't know why that is. We have Mr. Flanagan. John, how are you?
I'm good, Tom. Good morning.
What is your good morning to you? I'm actually. This morning is unique in one way. What do you suppose that is?
Let's see.
It's light when I come in.
Oh, that's always that. And I remember leaving work at 5 in the afternoon when you could see light in the sky, you know, after a season of darkness. That was always a real shot in the arm, too.
Without a doubt.
Take a coming and going.
Yeah, we'll take whatever it is. The I'm going through some CPI stuff here. I don't know if you're listening in, but the CPI, what do you suppose the CPI says the inflation is since January 2000?
6%?
Total? No, it's got it up 96% in 26 years. And I'm saying the price of houses is up it's got 196. It's up 250%, 260. So it's quite a bit higher than the inflation would tell you, let you to believe. What got me going on this shtick is the contract workers at Midway just signed with the. I guess I said, what do contract workers do? They consider 6,500 of them. Is that everybody who like cleans the place and does all that stuff, or what? I have no idea.
I mean, does it include people doing traffic control, parking attendants, and all that?
Probably.
That plus, you know, I don't know if it includes security people. You know,
no,
not TSA people. I don't think. Maybe.
No, not TSA, but I bet there's other security at the place.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're up to $17 an hour, and 18 next year, and after that, their wages are going to be up by the CPI. And I'm just saying, I don't think that's a very good,
no.
Very good indicator, because I'm looking here on the U.S. national debt clock. We have price of a new home, average new car, $22,000 in 2000. Now it's 50. So it's more like 2.6 again. It's not 1.9, is it?
Nope.
And I'm going to say that What do you suppose the amount of here's one. What do you suppose the medical stuff is? I'm going to say it's well into 3.5 times whatever it was in 2000. Easy.
Yep. Oh yeah.
And I don't, you know. Taxes. What did the people say in Illinois? It's for the last 30 years. It's been double the inflation rate.
Double inflation rate. Yep.
So I don't know what our guys are doing here. And then I hear a guy talking about inflation. Now again, I'm a firm believer, and I think I can, you know, any kind of academia will prove it, that your general inflation rate is generally always a monetary phenomenon. But individual areas within the system can have things affect it, like oil and those kinds of things. It can jam those prices way up. But after a period of time, you know, other prices will probably come down a little bit because you're spending so much on one, you don't have enough for the other, right? So,
right.
Anyway, I listened to a guy talking about food prices. And he goes, well, food prices are going to be the things that are affected the most. He goes, really, for four things. And, if you think about it, I didn't. He did. He goes, well, first you've got gas and diesel prices. Diesel more important because you're delivering stuff. So that's a problem. He goes, then you've got price of fertilizer, which a lot of it comes from other places. And by the way, you need processing. There's actually sometimes a lot of oil in the fertilizer processing, right, or energy. So that's a problem. We actually have a client or two this year that claimed they were not affected this year because they bought their stuff last year. So they bought their seed and their fertilizer in advance, so they're okay. They said, but if they didn't, they'd be in trouble, or just not planning. But the third is the people who harvest the stuff. He goes, probably half the people are either in the too afraid to come here, sent back, went back before they got sent back, in any of those groups. So you've got way less people to harvest stuff than you normally would. Because plus you've got the tariffs. The big tariff stuff is allegedly not there. It was got turned down by the Supreme Court. So now you got these other 10% tariffs all over the place. So you got four things affecting food, all basically coming from the government. It's pretty amazing. And then so I don't know, Jen, where are we doing? The regular person just getting squashed by the day. What are we doing with this?
Well, I think the home ownership is the thing that I'm kind of hearing most dire things about. And it's, there's a lot of what you could say in inflation, as a monetary event. But the fact that, taxes go up the way they do, it's because of misspending, fraud, you name it. It's not just because the value of the dollar is decreased. It's because the money is just being misspent in ever larger numbers. But the housing phenomenon is something that's really going to make a difference generationally in this country. And I don't, think anybody really understands just how enormous and impossible to solve it's become. The median home price now is what,
412 or something? 412.
Like year over year, like a little over 1% increase, which, again, the median home price is not an indicator of how unaffordable houses really are now, because it makes it look like there's a healthy market or a market that's kind of in balance, that values are increasing, but it's because it's tilted in favor of the most expensive, most lavish houses that continue to sell because people buy them who aren't bound by qualifying for mortgages, and don't have other financial problems like the average homeowner does. And I just don't see the data that we're relying on is telling us a story that's being kind of propped up or cushioned against how bad it's become for people who can't afford houses, period, even at the low end. And the low end houses are just not there for people. It's too hard for people to qualify. People who traditionally could qualify given what they were making, but they're being completely strapped by increased taxes and insurance costs, repair costs, all this stuff. They look at the prospect of owning a house as being totally out of sight.
Well, if you rent one of yours, is bad.
Yeah, and what does that really mean? For families, assuming that people will continue to produce families and have that as a goal, becoming an adult and branching out in the world and starting all over again, by creating people and opportunities for children and everything. I just don't see this being a happy prospect if you can't afford a house. I mean, there are people who won't have to live in a house to have kids, that's for sure.
Well, when you say that, I have the advantage on being on every day and listening to different people and trying to put two and two together. When I say advantage, I don't know if that's good or bad, but what you're seeing, and I see it from Walter being on today, and she's not going to discuss her current deals, but the last four or five houses that she has been involved in a sale of all went for appreciably higher in a big bidding war than the list price. Now, probably the person who listed it wrong, I would guess. A couple of the agents have been from out of the area and just looked at some comps, and they're not near as, shall we say, up on the areas that she's talking about that Aud is. I'll say stuff nice about her before she gets on. Aud really knows her crap, basically. And she'll see some house and she'll go, wait a minute, this one's listed at 420, who the hell did that? This thing's going to go for 470, and it'll go for like somewhere between 465 and 75. I mean, that she's that good. Again, I can't say that to her face because I'll never hear the end of it. But it's one of those situations where you look at who the buyers are, and we talk about this K-shaped thing, and one of the my economic themes, and I don't know if people necessarily buy into it or even know what the hell I'm talking about. The difference between the wealth in this country now has not been gained, generally, by wages. It's been gained by this inflation that has been run by the Fed. The general inflation I'm talking about, John. It has not worked its way down in general into salaries at any point. Now, because of the offshoring, because of a lot of other things, labor has not been in a position to demand higher wages. In some areas they are, but in other areas pretty much no. And I'd say just about in every area pretty much no. So you look at the people who are bidding, and you look at like a regular person. When I say regular person, every man. I'm going to say that right now, given the rates that we're down to 3% or whatever, most people could not afford the house they currently live in. At the current price, at the current mortgage rates. I'm going to say a majority of homeowners. That's a problem. We got there in 2007, 2008, did not end well. I think it's even a bigger problem this time because the rates are more of an issue. So now you've got this problem. So somebody is going to go buy a house. You have, on the one hand, in this corner, you've got Jim Lawler, comes out of school, has some debt, gets a job, finds a young lady. She's come out of school, has some debt, making some decent dough. The two of them together, trying to save up for a down payment. They're bidding against somebody who maybe is even retired, but has a house that they bought 30 years ago. The house is now part of this monetary issue that I'm talking about. The house is way up there, so they bought someplace at 170, maybe 150. Paid it off, and now they're selling that place for $400. They have some money in the bank, and they're bidding for a little nicer place at $450. It has nothing to do at that point with income. It has nothing to do with anything. You're talking about somebody who is trading one piece of the wealth bubble for another.
Right.
Sort of like the lady who bought into Mark Cuban's basketball team. I think her dad had, was it Las Vegas Sands? Was that the guy who died? Was that the person we're talking about, Jimmy? The son of the daughter of the guy who owned Las Vegas Sands? Anyway, she's got this stock. The old man gives it to her. There's no tax if you give it to your kid. Your basis remains the same. No, your basis gets to be the piggy-up basis. So now she sells the stock, doesn't have to pay any taxes on it. and trades this $1 billion for $1 billion in a basketball team. Well, how the hell exactly are you and I and Jimmy going to outbid her for that team? She not only has $1 billion to spend, by the way, it's 900 million of it, or 950, should be subject to tax, and it's not. How the hell do we bid against her exactly if all we've ever done is work?
Can't do it.
No, we're not even close. So you wonder why, once you start this K-shaped thing, the K keeps getting wider and wider and wider. I mean, like I say, the people that Audrey's either gotten outbid on or bid with, I don't know their I don't ever want to know their finances, but I get the feeling that the money is coming from the house they have just sold. Which is fine, except we're talking about somebody, and I mean, there's, you know, I hear for clients, a lot of them, but we're talking about people who never made more than $60,000 a year, which is what they're paying people. Saved their dough, did everything right, bought a house, paid it off, and now they have, maybe they put money in a 401k and a IRA, they probably did. So they have, out of all their wealth, I'm going to say $700,000 of it is the money they saved, interest they earned. Now, of course, if they're in stock, they got another issue. They bought the right stocks, they now have, you know, $2 million there, and now they got a house worth $500,000.
Right.
And that's the wealth. It has really nothing to do with how much money they made and saved like it was 50 years ago.
Right. Those people could afford two houses,
yeah,
or four houses.
Yeah. And so that for them to go out and for the young Jim Lawler with his new lovely bride working their fannies off, they're not outbidding those people. How could they? Now the question is, is the young Jim Lawler and his bride going to be able to buy a house?
Hey.
All right, the younger Jim Lawler. Are they going to be able to do the same thing? Are they going to put their 401k in some miracle stock, have the government run the market up, and by the time they're 60, they're going to tell the young kids how they should have run their life, right?
I'm going to be putting it in private equity.
Oh, there you go, private equity.
Private equity, crypto, it's all fair game in a 401k now.
Well, we're doing our best to screw this up. Even what we got going, we're doing our best to screw this up, aren't we?
I'm just looking at AI numbers. It says as of early 2026, the U.S. median home price is approximately $436,705.
All right, now Jimmy just looked at AI.
Came up with three numbers, John.
Yeah, this median listing price, does that show up on your little table there?
Median new home and a U.S. debt clock is 412. And their definition.
Oh, these might not be recent numbers. It shows the median listing price as of Zillow March 2026 market report, $394,933.
Yeah, that's what mine came up with, John. Yes.
So that's depending on what number you're looking at for the median sales price, there could be a 10% markup in all of these deals that they're all being, in bidding wars, and people with money to burn are able to drive the price higher and higher. That's being, that's distorting the whole market, though.
It shouldn't affect the median. Median is the price in the middle.
If the only inventory that's moving is being bought by people who have buying power that 90% of the population doesn't have. Which I think is kind of what's happening here.
Yep.
It's it's the people with existing houses. They own houses already, or they've got old money, or they made a killing of the stock market, or they're just they have financial portfolios that don't resemble 90% of populations. But Audrey has mentioned how that there are bid ups in a lot of deals these days, and I can see why, because I think there's a certain portion of the housing market that is not in any of these numbers.
Dan, we're talking regular townhomes for regular people. We're not talking about something you and I envision as being worth $450,000. We're off the road. You and I are Luddites here. We're talking about they're putting some. We went to breakfast and Archer Avenue and like Willow Springs Road, right? Stuff right there. They're putting up townhomes. They're near a train station. She goes, the entry level townhome is a 420. But here's what I'm talking about in the CPI. This thing does help me out. This dead clack. Healthcare costs now, of course, I think we would dispute this. $15,600 total U.S. spending on healthcare costs. Blah 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 blah. Per person. Healthcare costs $2,500 So again, it's three times, not two times, like the CPI would say. Correct. Right. College tuition now $27,400 college tuition $2,106 Again, 2.8 times or something. Besides, I'm gonna take a shot at this college tuition now, but at 27 plus, I think room and board is going up way more than the tuition in certain percentage terms. Isn't Northwestern like $18,000 or something for room and board?
Ridiculous! Yeah, it's crazy.
What was ours? $1,200 right?
Yeah,
and we survived.
It wasn't deluxe, but who wanted deluxe?
What makes you think it's even that much more? Well, they got rid of the army cots, so I guess that's a step up. Just saying, you know.
Yeah, but it had heat. Didn't have air conditioning, but, you know. No. Heat.
We got out of there in May, so as long as you put up with the first 2 weeks in September, you're okay. Really didn't need air conditioning most of the time.
No.
But these numbers, you wonder about the health of the population. You wonder about the psychology of what's going on. I mean, you look at the suicides and the murders and stuff. And what are you making this guy in New Orleans, shooting all the kids?
Oh, man.
Not New Orleans, Shreveport.
Shreveport,
it was in Mike Johnson. But you know that was an illegal immigrant, right? That's what's being spread.
Well,
usually that was an upcoming divorce, I believe.
I don't know. I just know it's in Mike Johnson, so it's red. This, that. I guess he shot people, John, at his girlfriend's and then his wife's.
He shot a one-year-old. How do you do that?
Well, I guess they lived nearby each other.
There's like three locations, and some of the people were escaping from one place to another, and he tracked them down.
Yeah.
We have to get Dr. Blade on one of these days, talk about his view of the country's mental health. I don't think it's too good.
Well, Tom, I just happened to stumble on a video last night. I think John Lee and I talked about, you know, the person who produces these videos. It's Lei's Real Talk, L-E-I, is her name. She's a Chinese-born American. She lived in the United States for some time.
Doesn't matter. She doesn't belong to be here.
I don't know what her status is, but she doesn't really, you know, take public. I guess it's nobody's business, but she gives, you know, does videos periodically every day, other day or so, talking about the mental health crisis in China right now, and it's coming out in all these just unbelievable public mass events where people who have been, you know, either wiped out financially or have been wronged in some way by some corruption in the Communist Party, you know, living on the margins of life now after, you know, never having experienced anything like that. There's been like mass poisonings in markets in Beijing.
Did she talk about the people paying mortgages for places they can't even live in?
No, she has talked about that. This is just in the last like 2 weeks.
Well, that has to contribute to it, don't you think?
You know, people, you know, driving cars through markets, mowing down people. You can't get good numbers on the casualties. This poisoning episode where somebody just went through a market and contaminated all this food at like 7 in the morning when all these people are buying breakfast on their way to wherever they're going. And as many as like 1,100 people supposedly died. And she just says this is a collapse of just, you know, the mental health of a population that has just been ground down and is now, it has no other way to express its frustration or its hatred of the system by just taking out innocent people and just, you know, going off the reservation completely. And I think that's kind of understandable in places like China where there's so little opportunity to express yourself or to get true information about anything or communicate freely with, you know, the outside world.
Whereas here, we're getting all kinds of good information.
Well, Yeah. I'm just saying that this is, you know, this is, and of course, if this were to be exposed or people knew the full extent of it in China, which they can't let happen, there'd be more and more of these events. But it is a mental health event on a, you might say, a global scale, or at least an international scale, that, you know, has not been, we've never seen anything like this triggered by the kind of financial, you know, despair that, that people face now. So how else do people express that kind of loss of confidence in the system other than by just trying to destroy what's left of the system?
I think somehow, Jen, and I don't know what, we need to say, you're pretty good at this. We need Dr. Blade, and Jimmy has some pretty good insights as well, but I just look at, I don't think it has to do really with the amount of money you have, honestly. It has to do with your view of the future. I mean, I'll contrast when I first started on the trading floor. Again, I started as a trader. I didn't work my way up. I had other jobs, at Allied and Pullman and so forth, which was, you know, to a large extent, it was really pretty good because I had other experience. But then again, I didn't know half the people on the trading floor. Like, they all knew each other. So and Jimmy and I will hang out once in a while on a Thursday, Friday night with the people that are in their mid to late 20s that are now working down here. And I'm going to say the education level of the current group is way higher than the people who were working on the trading floor in those days. I mean, I was very much different having a grad degree coming down here with other jobs. I mean, I was not anywhere near like, I'm not saying better or anything. I'm just saying it was different. A lot of people came here right out of, you know, they might have had a college degree, associate's degree, maybe not even that. But anyway, they were here, and this was going to be their future. And I'm going to say the average person didn't make as much as these guys do now, guys and ladies. But the difference in mentality was absolutely dramatic, John. I mean, everybody played some sports. Most people did. So every day, when you came to the trading floor, even if you're making 500 hours a week as a runner, as a runner, next month you were going to be a clerk. The next day was always going to be better. And oh, by the way, you had a ball game that night and you couldn't wait to make it to that. And you had a bunch of friends. Everybody had a bunch of people that you hung around with because there's 2,000 people in a room. And now these kids, like I said, are 25, 30, 32. They work in market reg. They make decent dough after they pay their loan off. It's down to not so very decent dough. Barely can afford their rent, are never going to own a house, and never think they're going to have a new car. They're never going to be a trader. They're never going to move up. There aren't many traders left. The difference in mental health is dramatic, I think. I mean, what do you think, Jimmy?
Oh, yeah. I think it... Excuse me. I think it's different. You know, before, like you said, we went out and played. We went out and did sports. When I was in college, I remember 10, maybe 20 years ago, one of our college deans said their biggest issue was these kids lock themselves in the rooms and just are online all the time. So when things change, like in the real world, well, it's very different. But you see it, Chief, when we go to series or this, everyone's on their phone. They don't talk to each other.
No.
They're on their phones. And every once in a while, they go up and look at it, and then they talk. But there's no real social interaction anymore.
Well, I know I'm a sports junkie, even though today's professional sports I'm not so big on, but I mean, you could have your worst day and go out and all of a sudden go 2 for 3 in a softball game and all of a sudden life's good. I mean, John, you know what I'm talking about? I mean,
I remember, you know, in the 70s and into the 80s too, the work culture that I was a part of downtown, you know, people in the office went out to lunch together as a group maybe 3 times a week, sometimes people would, you know, go out and get lunch, go to Wendy's, which was a new phenomenon in 1976 or 77, get Wendy's for the...
Where's the beef?
And then in the evening, you know, at least Friday night, but often, you know, other nights too, people went out to places like Mayor's Row and Dearborn Street that was, you know, it had just all, you know, like a buffet of meatballs and, you know, chicken wings and stuff that, you know, was there. You'd have to pay for it. If you were drinking there, you could go up and get all this stuff. People did it all night long, and people would meet there like at 5:30 in the afternoon after work, and often close the place down. And people unwound. They caught all the gossip, you know, other people. The noise level was huge. People were coming and going all the time. There was a great big place. Different seating areas than a huge bar. And during the day, you know, they served lunch, drinks, and everything else. But there were other places, lots of other places like that, where you could blow off steam and not spend a ton of money. In fact, do it very cheaply.
No, I agree, John.
And then
John,
tumble out of the Metro or the L, and it was safe. And you go home, you get refreshed, you go back the next day to work and go out to lunch again. And they bought, I mean, I was doing that even in law school. You know, after when classes ended at 9 o'clock at night, people would go out.
What's two beers downstairs at O'Neill's is an hour's work at Midway.
Yeah, right. And then this is back when, you know, beers are 50 cents.
Yeah.
So,
well, is dating you, John, but...
yeah, I know, but...
You're right. I mean, I remember in the 80s when I got... late 80s when I got out of college, there would still be the $5 pitcher, the right. Dollar beer night, you would have a buffet... and it was a social thing that you'd go out with a bunch of people. Hey, the bar down the street's having the happy hour, and that's where you went. Or on a right. Wednesday night, they have the free buffet. That's where you went. You just don't see that anymore.
But, I mean, it's all, I think, well, my theme, what we're talking about, it's a percentage of your pay. I mean, this, as workers... You'll never see this phenomenon again. I mean, I was not involved in... These are guys who were on the floor before me. But back in 1978, 79, and even, say, 80, 81, a solid trader on the trading floor... Now, you only had 4 expirations a year in your stock, right? So it wasn't like there's an expiration every month or every week or every day like there is now in some stuff. And I used to make, in the OEX, I made... most of my money expiration week, and a lot of that was in the last hour on Friday night. I can't imagine with that kind of volume that back in those days, if I had an expiration every night, how well I would have done. I mean, there's no way to tell. But you made, I'm going to say, this is when I first came down to interview down here, and then I went to work for Allied for a while, that a really solid trader made 100 to 100 and a quarter a year. We're talking 1980. And, of course, if you were some kind of a sleazebag and you could work the tax law at the time, you could pay tax on, like, none of that, which a lot of guys did and lived to regret it. But let's say you didn't pay tax on all of it. So you got $100,000, essentially, to blow at age 28 in 1978. Jan, what were apartments? 400, maybe?
Well, I remember my first apartment I got in 1979. I paid $120 for it in Rogers Park, and the day I signed the lease, the janitor, you know, was managing the building, said, "It's too bad you didn't look at this apartment a month ago. You could have gotten it for $95.
I was one of the few.
It was a nice apartment, one bedroom apartment.
Yeah, but it was in Rogers Park. But I say, if you live long enough, you eventually live in Rogers Park. Isn't that the saying?
Oh, well, and it was great. You know, it was the quality of the housing. You know, it was dense. It was like,
yeah, but
South
it was in Rogers Park. You got to take your only artery of the world was the Red Line.
Yeah, well, that's all the only one I needed.
You know? God. Anyway, but yeah,
3 blocks from the lake. You know, just beautiful, life. Tons of restaurants, tons of bars, tons of bookstores.
A hot car was 6.
Yeah,
I mean, for God's sake, and And what was dinner out?
And who needed a car? Depending on how you lived your life, well, if you didn't need a car.
If you wanted to find the girls, you needed the Camaro or something.
Oh yeah, I was too busy drinking.
Who said you needed it for transportation? In our house in Beverly,
it was a babe magnet.
Oh yeah, in our house in Beverly, we had Dr. J and I and this guy who traded for me. And some nutty friend of Dr. J's. We all live there, right? Of course, the goofy friend of Dr. J's lived in the basement. Three of us, we all got our own semi-floor in this house in Beverly, right? So we move in, and I had a Bronco, and I bought a GTO, an old GTO, for like nothing. You know, I paid $3,000 for the thing. And so Jan has a Firebird with the T-tops. He's got a Corvette that they sort of remodeled. They forget to put the stuff together like the heat and things like that, so it was kind of an interesting to drive. JD had some other junk, and then we bought this limousine. So we got like five or six cars just hanging around the place. The guy next door goes, you know, I like to keep track of the neighborhood. Which one of these cars is yours? And I go, well, they're all ours. They're all yours. Well, yeah. What do you need all those cars for? Well, we don't really need them. We just sort of have them. The only one we ever drove to work was my Bronco, right? And the rest of them just sat there. Of course, JD's, I don't know what the hell was wrong with his, but he had a Plymouth Valiant or something. He could barely get out of the driveway. But we drove the limo for a while. That thing was a riot to drive it. But, you know, those things, they were peanuts compared to what we made. And we weren't making it, you know... For somebody 30 some years old making $100,000 not paying taxes when a beer is 75 cents, it doesn't get any better than that, does it?
Right. Well, Kevin just texted reminding us that we didn't have to worry about vaccination mandates or mask mandates or social distancing or work from home. If we had to be in a job today. Even like the ones we had that were okay and had possibilities for advancement, but you couldn't socialize with people, and there was no place to go out and have a couple of drinks after work, and there was no safe way to get home by public transportation that was dependable, and you couldn't afford a car. Well, I'd be pretty sour too, Tom.
Yeah. You know what? The day I signed up at First Stop to be a market maker, I had been on the floor once as a tour. Lady, beautiful lady, takes me to the floor. She goes, here's the call card, here's the call cards, here's the put cards. This is the buy side, this is the sell side. Good luck. That was the orientation. So there, go forth and prosper, right? The day I signed up, I put $10,000 in my account because I just saved up from all my consulting work. And they go, okay, we'll pick up your hospitalization. We're talking about a premium Blue Cross prop thing, like no deductible. So after a year, I started doing halfway decent. So I hired a clerk, Mike Jantz, who's now no longer with us. He's got a family. He was older too. He'd worked for Pullman for a while. Guess what I had to pay for him per month for the whole family for the Cadillac plan?
$100.
$75.
Yeah, and you can't get that coverage today.
No, and you can't get that coverage today. And I don't. Now, granted, if you're going to have a heart transplant, you didn't want one in 1981. But the fact is, it was real hospitalization. Covered his wife having another kid, the whole bit. I mean, when you talk about this CPI number, it's fictional. It's fictional. What would PTI? If you ask my brother, if we could find the same plan, what would that be, John? $3,200 a month?
Oh, God. Well, I wouldn't have it.
Yeah, I mean, nobody would even give it to anybody. You'd have to have a deductible. You'd have to have something, some kind of copay. I mean, what is that? $75 versus $3,500? I guess I could put the calculator up here, but matter of fact, I will, just for giggles. I mean, what are we... I guess, let's put it in here. $1 in in, what did I say, 1981. Well, no, I hired Janzi in 82. So, where are we? 1982. March of 2006 would be $3.50. So they're saying my 75 hours, I should be paying, let's be generous and say four, I should be paying $300 a month. What would I be paying? $3,000?
Yeah.
We're not even on the same, we're not even on the same reservation here, are we?
No. You know, I have thought about this a lot in my, you know, advancing age, but, you know, as the children of Depression era parents, you and I, people in our age group, you know, we're always kind of made aware, I think, by their elders, our elders, that, you know, things used to be really tough when I was your age. You know, you've come along at a time after the war, and a lot of the people went to war, did not come back, as you well know. And, you know, you've got a life ahead of you like one I wish I could have had. And, you know, they weren't like griping or guilt-tripping people, but you could tell it was, you know, they were thinking about it all the time. And this is, in some ways, what they hoped for, that their children would not have to go through what they did, because they were dealt a bad hand in many ways. And yet, you know, my perspective looking at them was like, God, you lived at a time where, you know, houses were $3,000, you know, and cars were $600, and, you know, no, you didn't go to college, but you got a better education probably than I could pay for today in college. And, you know, I'll, you know, I would have traded spots in some ways. So if they thought I was living the high life, I could see ways in which I felt I had been dealt a bad hand too, that things were not going to be that great. But today, when I look, I don't know how people, well, I think I know how people younger than I look at me and my generation, and how I look at them. And I look at, we're just coming out of college now, and think, God, I don't know if I could survive in a world like you're facing. I don't know. I would have to go back and rewrite the rules of my life and started way earlier making a different life, knowing what I'd have to face, where you got, you know, unaffordable college education that you go bankrupt trying to pay for. And there's not a lot of job opportunities when you come out, and the jobs don't pay anything like they did, you know,
it's not in terms of money, it's in terms of what you can buy with it, buying power, right? You're talking about paying.
Right. And what you really need, and how much of that is even affordable anymore. So there's been a kind of inversion. You know, I think my parents looked at my generation with envy, and I look at the generation coming after me with, you know, dread, because I don't think it's really hit them, and maybe it hasn't hit me either, just what a tough road they're going to have.
But I think, Jan, what you brought up, maybe not even knowing you were doing it, with talking about the Chinese lady, it is a question of the position you're in. I mean, I'm not about to go back and say that if you had a heart rhythm problem in 1980 that you'd still be alive.
No, my uncle had, I think, arrhythmia. Yeah, nobody knew what that was.
Yeah, my aunt did too. You know, and then she just died. You know, and
he's 52. He died.
And so, you go by one of these World War II, especially in a small town, hero. You know, the badges on all the graves, 57, 58, 62. I mean, so, you know, but the point is people's attitude, even when my grandmother's generation, and I was lucky enough where they lived long enough to where I was able to, you know, get pretty good ideas out of them. It was all about, a lot of it was survival of family. It was way better than where you came from. It was way better than the boat you came over on. And it was, the question was survival. This was America. You get to go to school. You get to own a house. All those kinds of things. The outlook was still very rosy. You had kids, and oh, by the way, your kids. Then when their kids had kids, and all of a sudden I was going to Notre Dame, it was like, oh, my God, type of thing. So it was always, the tomorrow was always going to be brighter than today, even if you didn't have crap, basically. Your view was generally okay. Now, it wasn't like there weren't any suicides or anything back then. There were. Life was really tough, and God help you if you got sick, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm not talking about, you know, Andy and Mayberry here, but the outlook was somewhat different. And people that were willing to work could go. I mean, there were guys in my neighborhood in St. John Fisher. One guy was the assistant manager of a Jewel. He had 2-3 kids. He had a bungalow. The wife didn't work, or she might have done hair 2 days a week or something. Kids went to St. John Fisher. He had a car, station wagon. It wasn't the best. It was a Chevy, 3 on the tree. But he had all that stuff. You know, a guy was a manager of a Jewel. And, you know, nobody went out to dinner every night or anything. But even so, that was cheap. And now I'm saying these people don't seem like it's nowhere near as bad as China. What do you think those people think their future is in China? They're making nothing. I don't. They might have talked into buying some condo they're paying for, and they can't even live in the place. The debt load's got to be dramatic. What is their reason to get up in the morning for? They don't have any kids. They don't want any kids, right? God help.
Right. They were forced not to have kids for many years.
Yeah. So now what is life like? And
well, this is what the Communist Party, you know, had better grapple with, because. And this is why they run a totalitarian state the way they do, because if the true extent of people's, you know, lack of a future were to hit home hard enough, it's the end of the game. And it's just mass revolution. I mean, it's that desperate, I think. And there has to be a kind of, you know, imposition from on top of diversions, you know, stop the flow of information as much as you can. Keep people's, you know, vision locked on, you know, this situation you're in. Don't think it should be any better than it is, because once you see how bad it is and how bad it's going to get before you're through, you wouldn't tolerate it. Well, you just throw all the stakes to the wind. You wouldn't care what the outcome was. You'd gladly sacrifice a lot, including your life, maybe, to get the hell out from underneath this. And that's, you know, there's been examples like that throughout history, the recent history in many cases.
But, and you have some people in the world, a couple of them happen to be in office, that none of those people deserve a different life. Now, I'm not saying you want to open borders up. There's a lady, there's some lady senator from somewhere, I should remember the name. Evidently, the House passed this thing that to extend, I don't really know I don't have the background on this thing for people from, is it Haiti, Jen?
Yeah.
How many people were forced to get out of there? I don't know why Haiti's all screwed up, but it is. Dominican Republic is the same island. It seems to be way better. I never could understand that. But anyway, Haiti's been a problem my whole lifetime. So evidently, didn't somebody let a lot of people from Haiti in here, right? With like a 10-year deal or something? Now the House said we're going to extend that. Now the lady in the Senate, and I don't know where, I think it's some of these women, but oh no, there's no way it's dead on arrival here. We're shipping them all back. How do you ship back people that have been here for 10 years, have a job, have a house, or at least an apartment? Where are you going to send them back to in Haiti, Jen? I don't get. Are we going to send them halfway back and pull the plug on the boat? I mean, what are we going to do? I mean, I don't see the even if that's your attitude, what's the logistics of this? I mean, I don't get it. I don't see how you can even do that.
Well, it can be done, but you know, this was not thought about at all when they were given, you know, temporary residence or whatever. You know, how this would actually play out, and of course, there would never have been the possibility, I don't think, of making people agree from the get-go. This is a path to citizenship. Just by bringing these people here, they will be citizens. I don't think that alone, you know, as to any group of people that you want to bring in here for whatever purpose, whether it's just to alleviate suffering or to take pressure off of the government that you're supporting that doesn't know what to do with all these people. And, you know, the U.S. has had a tortured relationship with Haiti's governments, to say the least.
Yeah, what Papa Doc and Little Doc,
300 years, practically. Yeah. But it's never been, you know, nobody's feet have ever been held to the fire. What are the consequences, and what's the next step, assuming you bring these people in large numbers? What is their legal status? How long does it last? And what do you do when that legal status expires? And nobody asks or answers those questions.
Well, I mean, Jan, remember when the casinos in Illinois were all going to be on riverboats, because if we decided we didn't like them, they all could just We could just unhook them from the dock and send them down the river. We don't have them anymore. How much of an imagination was that? There's probably people here that still think the Irish are only here temporarily. And maybe wish they would. We would all go back. Yeah. Early.
A lot of the Irish probably.
Well, yeah, a lot of the Irish people that figure the Irish came after them should go back too. So what do you do? So somebody is here. They, for some reason, feel that, you know, the world is their oyster, being in America. They get a job. The kids are in school. What exactly are you going to do? Go round them up in paddy wagons and ship them out of here? What do you do with? What about their employer? Hey, where's my employee?
Well, nobody asked those questions, Tom. And of course, now nobody has any good answers other than we can't do that. Well, I think somebody should have thought of that before they brought people in.
But they didn't. I mean, guess what? The casinos are now on land, right? They're not on a boat anymore. Anybody really think they were going to ship them downriver? I mean, right?
That had to be the goofiest idea.
But how many times have we done it? Oh, it's just temporary. Okay. I mean, the trading floor in the CBOE was open outcry. They didn't have specialists, right? Well, all of a sudden, as time went by, the firm's going, oh, we need one person we can deal with, meaning that they can beat up on and get paid by and, you know, get dinner from. And then the CBOE gave out DPMs, which essentially were specialist books to people. And there was a process, you know. Anyway, the idea was you could never sell them. I'm sitting there going, here we go with the casinos on the boats thing. All of a sudden, they became saleable. The people that had them got out of the industry, made a boatload of money, and they're gone. And there aren't open outcry crowds anymore. Anybody who thought for a second that those things weren't going to become saleable had to be the dumbest man on earth. Just like the casinos. Just like we'll have people come here for 10 years, get a job, get an apartment, put kids in school, but that's okay. In 10 years, we're going to ship them home. Why would anybody even think of that, John?
Well, I would have to say that, you know, temporary protected status is a bad idea from the get-go. I mean, that's, you can't, like, do it halfway without, you know, the other shoe fall and tell people what that's going to mean.
Well, you can do it in Southern California if somebody's picking lettuce. You let whoever the picker over is, the family stays in Mexico, and you got 3 months to pick the lettuce, and you go home. I'm not saying I approve of that. But that would at least make sense from a policy standpoint. You don't say you can come here for 5 years and pick lettuce. And, oh, by the way, bring your family, get an apartment, have everybody in school, have the wife have a job, and then we're shipping you back, do you?
No, but then, of course, all of this stuff had a date when everything was set to unravel, as the case of Haiti. And nobody, you know, worried about what that would mean for the people who were here and what expectations they had and what they thought they had been told about where this would end. I mean, to me, the policy was a disaster from the get-go. How you fix it? Well, you can't fix it. I mean, deportation seems to be the only legal group to follow unless you just have a mass amnesty, and that's, I don't think people are going to fly with
well,
that.
Okay, but I mean, you can't, we're going to put 20,000 people on some succession of aircraft carriers, go to the dock in Haiti and just drop everybody off? I mean, what's the logistics of this?
Well, all that's really going to happen, if you revoke their status, and in fact they've overstayed whatever reason they had to be here legally, temporarily, you put these people in limbo, and you make them...
Where does limbo exist? Where exactly is limbo? Are we talking about camp?
It's between a legal system that seems not to want to deport people if they're not here legally anymore, and people that were brought in with the expectation that your legality would someday expire, and we'll worry about that later. Well, I mean, those are just irreconcilable.
Yeah, they don't match. So, by the way, are there 10,000 apartments in Haiti waiting for these people to come back? Are there 10,000 jobs? I mean, I don't think so.
I mean, they'll put them someplace else.
I like the halfback. Just let them halfback. Haiti doesn't have to worry about it, neither do we. Pull a plug on the boat. Hey, what happened to that boat? I don't know. It must be in the Caribbean someplace. You just do that. Don't go anywhere near the survivors. I mean, what the hell?
Well, this shows what a stupid policy it always was, Tom.
Well, Well, to the extent that...
Fix things in Haiti? No.
Well, to the extent that there's people here that have a life and are producing and paying taxes, I'm not so sure it was all that horrible. Why don't we like them?
But, you know, has it really worked out in any kind of a long-term fashion that made this a good idea? I don't know.
Professor Hill's married to a Haitian lady. They got triplets, and she's running for office in New York, or was. Looks to me like she deserves to be here. I don't know. I don't think she's making a... She's certainly not a drain on you or me, is she?
No. And if she's married... You know,
well, she's probably a drain on Hal with the triplets. But that's Hal's problem. And he seems to be dealing with it, right?
Yep. Well, I just... None of this has, you know, been you know, spelled out, you know, explained. If the idea was to save people who are otherwise, you know, threatened with, you know, loss of their lives because of political violence or... You know, whatever cause that they had to be given the status in the first place, this is not something that can work in a piecemeal way if the situation has gotten that bad. If you take some people but not everybody, and how you decide who that is and what you do with them after,
well, somehow somebody decide. But to me, it's just like.
But the problem, Tom, nobody would have gone for this long term. They had to put an expire date on it. Well, and having done that, now that the date has come and gone, what do you do? Nobody has been thinking about this. Nobody has been.
It's just like the
advising it,
John. It's just like the riverboats and the DPMs. What if you got up tomorrow and said, "Hey, wait a minute! Look at all these casinos. They're all on. Look at the size of these places." By the way, they're not doing so hot since the state has decided to put little casinos in every restaurant and bar. What if you got up tomorrow and said, "Hey, wait a minute. All you assholes were supposed to be on the water so we can get ready. We don't think it's a good idea now. Let's take the Harrah's in Joliet down. Let's take the one here, the one in Des Plaines. What is that one? The river something? What is that in that place?"
River.
Rivers, yeah.
Well, you know what? You know where that one was originally? I'll bet none of you guys can guess.
Was it on a river?
Well, yeah. Which, duh. You know, this Matt's pretty clever. I actually was on that boat. The only riverboat I was ever on was that boat. Where was I?
Joliet.
Mississippi?
It was in East Moline.
Ah, yeah.
And you went on the Illinois side, and there the thing was, and the thing was beautiful, too. It wasn't like some you know, paddle thingy. We go on it, and this is how you know, dumb people can be, including me. I've been to Vegas, like, you know, all kinds of times. And I'm like, God, how could you... What's the point of having a two-hour time limit, you know, because you've got to go out and come back? Well, of course, there's a little bit of a breeze that night, so they decide it was too windy to go out on the Mississippi with this big boat, which is all bullshit. But anyway, so we stay there. Everybody piles in, and I'm going, you know, it's 2 hours. That's kind of crazy. Everybody who piled on, not everybody, but just about everybody, piles on, immediately dives for a table, basically blows all their dough in an hour and a half, then heads for the bar. And I'm like, this is genius. Every 2 hours, you get a whole new group of idiots that come out, blow all their dough, and then go drink themselves silly, go walk off the thing, stagger off, and you get another group. So this is much smarter than Vegas. You know, just, I'm sitting there going, this is absolute genius. Jimmy, I was never so shocked in my life. I thought, this is like really bad. It was genius. Talk about how much I didn't know, huh?
Well.
But I mean, if you went out today and said, hey, none of these guys should be on dry land, what the hell? They'd look at you like you're a goofball. If you look at somebody and said, you know, these DPMs never should have been sold, they look at you like you were from Mars. What do you mean? We always knew we could sell them. I mean, you know, it's the same thing, right?
No.
Oh, these people, we don't want these people here forever. Okay, let's make it 10 years. At the end of 10 years, everybody will forget, and they'll say, well, you're not going to send them home now, are you? Which is, you know, right? Same thing. I mean,
but just to kind of return to the Haitian issue for a minute, could this possibly play out where the expectation is if we revoke status and you're vulnerable to retrieval or incarceration or deportation, how many people will self-deport? can we expect any of these people to go back to Haiti?
To go where?
Do they want to go back to Haiti?
To do what? Where are they going to live?
Family connections there, or are they all about getting more of their relatives here? And I you know, at some point, you know, if this isn't the teaching moment, there's lots of other opportunities, I guess, before we all go down the drain. But you can't bring people here and expect them, you know, to not ask questions. And if there are questions that need to be asked, like when does this expire and how do I deal with it when it expires, what are my options?
Because everybody knew it was not going to expire, right? We're not going
to say. Except everybody knew it had to expire, Tom, because there was no way it could have been done.
No, until you got somebody like Trump, nobody even thought of it. I'll bet I could get out. I can't do it, but you're the attorney. I'll bet you could go back how many hundred years, and you could find out that our purchase, the U.S. of A.'s purchase of the Louisiana Purchase, was illegal. Now what? We giving it back to Spain? It was never the French's to sell. Now what? You're going to go to Spain and say, by the way, you got the entire inside of the U.S.? What are you going to do?
Well, this is what's happening in Vancouver, British Columbia.
Well, that's what I'm saying. At some point, when do you say...
I mean, everybody with a house there, anybody who's been living there for no matter how many generations is living on land they don't own. So, you know, we got to divvy it up among the tribes of indigenous people, or, you know, First Nations people that have a better claim to this. And all you people who sank money into this and paid taxes for, you know, decade after decade, too bad, you're going to be resettled. I mean, this is kind of... You know, this is doing it to the people who were, you know, born and lived here, and it didn't think there was any problem with their, you know, right to be living on the land that they've been paying money for all this time. And all of a sudden, now the provincial government is saying, "Oh, yeah, we've thought about this, and no, you're gonna have to move on here." This is like what happened in Palestine. It's ridiculous.
Well, you know, I don't know how this all played out actually, but
Hawaii. It's politically, you know. Once you start deciding that, you know, we have some reason to bring people into this country from another country, and
which we, by the way, everybody's from another country who's here.
But I mean, to invite them and to offer them some kind of, you know, legal, you know, escape hatch to bring them in the first place. You know, whether it was the Cuban boat people or the Haitians
or the Irish,
or the Irish, anybody.
Yeah.
You know, and this is. Once you start fiddling with this and giving people a route to any other kind of, you know, life or future, and you do it under some kind of temporary status that's going to unwind at a certain point, which this always was going to do, you've created a complete mess. And, you know, this to me is, you know, how it gets fixed. The reason they did it, Tom, is because nobody would have tolerated having it done indefinitely, or doing it at all without some kind of a sunset provision in it. And of course, they put that sunset provision.
I wouldn't say nobody.
And now they don't. Who would have gone for?
Okay, well, since you're Mr. Real Estate Dude, with your teaching and everything at the Chicago Title and Trust, I'll lobby the one about what about Hawaii. I'm never one of these guys that says, you know, what about Obama? What about Hawaii? That property was given, I don't know who gave it to people.
It was taken.
Oh, okay, let me finish. The all the houses in like Honolulu and places were not, what do they call it, fee simple? The property was a 100-year lease. And the people who owned most of the property were, a lot of them were the Mormons and other people. Okay, 100 years is like a long time, long after I'm gone, right? Well, guess what? The 100 years came up. Now, that property didn't revert back to, was it the territory of Ohio or of Ohio, of Hawaii? All those people were allowed to keep it, weren't they? They shouldn't have. Now, I don't
know. Well, I think that was part of the arrangement with the one. Turned from a territory into a state.
No, it was a 100-year lease. So there were a lot of people were Mormons. They owned a lot of Honolulu, and everybody's house was on a property that was leased. And yet, all of a sudden, 100 years is up, And you're going to say, okay, the money goes back to, the property goes back to somebody else, the state. The state gets to sell it again. And oh, by the way, who's ever lived there is shit out of luck.
No. I don't think it was the Mormons. Most of them were from New England and they were Protestants. But they...
I'm talking about the people who leased it.
Oh, yeah. The people who leased it, I think so. But the people that own the island, there's like five or six families that swindled it out of Kamehameha.
Okay.
And they got smart enough that they will... Yes, Hawaii is a lend-lease state. You don't... Rarely do you own the property, except for now you have so many generations of those five families that they're starting to start to sell.
Somehow or another, a lot of them were sold to Mormons. Whatever, it doesn't matter. It's not like it's not a religious thing. But I'm saying the people whose house lived that was there, that owned the house, did not own the property.
Correct.
And after 100 years, when people put the 100-year lease out there, nobody even cared, God, what's going to happen in 100 years. How many people care about what's going to happen in 100 years?
Well, Hong Kong,
same thing. All of a sudden,
that went back.
Panama Canal, sort of, right?
Yeah. That type of land ownership is still common.
My only point is people have routinely done stuff that you're right. If I brought in, 15, thieves from God knows where, and I won't even say thieves, 15. Kind of weird-looking dudes from God knows where. We're going to stick them out on this farm and let them become farmers. That's okay. In 20 years, we're going to kick them out. People will buy that. But in 20 years, all of a sudden, they got a nice farm going and everything else. Oh, no, we got to kick them out. Well, wait a minute. Well, why? They got kids in school. They got a job. They're paying taxes. Yeah, but that was the deal. Well, who made the deal? You didn't make the deal. I didn't make the deal. Who made the deal? Depending on the political climate of the time, you might say, let's just forget it, let's let them stay. Or you might have a hair up your ass and go, oh no, they got to go back where they came from. Okay, where'd they come from? Nobody even knows. At least this place, they came from Haiti, I guess. It hasn't happened before.
Given the short-sightedness of people who come up with these ideas and draft legislation, there probably was a sense, oh, things are really awful in Haiti now. If we give these people temporary status until 2026, by then things will have changed and improved, and these people will want to go back, and they won't want to stay here because their heart.
Well, anybody will believe that?
But this is how short-sighted people think.
Well, you did hear
it's not like things were ever going to get much better in Haiti at the rate they were going.
You do remember the comment of your beloved Oval Office denizen right now, when he had the Cuban soccer team up from Miami. And all the guys were Cuban. He said something to the effect of, don't worry, we're going to take the island over and you can all go back. I'm sitting there listening to that going, he just didn't say that, did he?
But to Tom, he was just expressing a commonly held belief of the expats in Florida that they're waiting, they want to go back a lot. They were cheated. They like where they were. They've done okay here, but they have never gotten to the idea that they had to be kicked out. They'd love to go back on their terms, of course. But he wasn't saying anything, racist or anything. We got to get you out of here.
If he didn't, it would be the first time.
Well, he's not that stupid. He wouldn't say that. But we had Cuban friends at Notre Dame. I heard that endlessly. They were itching to go back. They were damn pissed off that they had been kicked out in the first place, as all they heard in their families living in Puerto Rico or Florida or wherever they sought refuge. They didn't want to stay there. They wanted to go back to Cuba.
Well, I bought my Toyota T100 from this Cuban guy in Miami. The guy who was a serious consultant for like oil firms and stuff. He had a terrific family and was a martial arts instructor that brought kids of all backgrounds all through Europe for martial arts tournaments. I don't think he was planning on going back. But I'm saying you're right.
Depending on what you came from and what you got here, and when you weighed the two in the balance, you decided, well, I'm better off here than I was there. Of course, there's people like that. But I'm just saying he was not taking some kind of absolutely minority or crackpot statement here out of the mouth.
How do you know? He does it all the time.
A lot of people have said.
He would never do something like that, right? Just saying. Anyway. All right, we got to talk a little bit about, before Audrey comes in, we only got a few minutes. What about war versus markets, and who's trading all this stuff, John? Again, we opened down last night about 50-something in the spooze. We are going to go to break in a few minutes, and we're only down 31 only. Every time this has happened, we have buyers that come in. I don't know who the buyers are. They always seem to make out okay. Part of my trading background says maybe someday they won't. Be careful what you ask for. The fact that it always happens doesn't mean you can do it tomorrow night. But so far, I'm going to say what? They're 10-0, right? And the guy who sold it to him has been 1-1 and 10 or 0-10. So, I mean, it's the interjection here between policy, between this thing to be over in 2 days. Oh, by the way, we're going to blast everybody. I've never seen anything quite like this. I guess I've never. We when Vietnam was the first war that was in media, this is the first war that's on social media. I think it's a little bizarre, don't you?
Yeah. Not just war, it's bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, it's a... what do you make of this guy in the... talk about people shooting people. The guy blasted his wife, then blasted himself. Was he the lieutenant governor?
Oh, and yeah.
Was that Virginia, West Virginia, somewhere over there?
A lot of demons afoot in the country, huh?
Yeah, but they're all armed, which is not the best. But anywho, where do you think the Bears Stadium is going to land? Or are we going to be dumb enough to build this thing for these guys?
Oh, I hope not. I mean, I have a hunch it's going to be Arlington Heights. I just see the Bears, you know, given where the family stake is, you know, in the Bears and its historical association with Illinois, and you know, I just think from a standpoint of keeping your fan base somewhat recognizable from what always was, you'd be better off in Arlington Heights than you would in Indiana. And
do you think your fan base there?
I think the more people willing to go to Arlington Heights who always went to Bears games than, you know, moving their allegiance to Indiana and making that trek.
Okay, define people in regards to revenue. Split the people out. We got a minute. I'm not talking about you and I grabbing tickets and going and sit with the great unwashed. I'm talking about the real money and the high-priced seats and the skyboxes that are, you know, $2,500 a ticket, and you got to buy 20 of them or something, plus food, plus booze. I mean, that's where a lot of the money is. Now, especially, I don't think you have to share that. So I'm not sure how that works, so I'll belay that. But do you think your highly political, highly upscale people that can get downtown by limo, Uber, whatever you want to do it, even train, I suppose, even though they probably wouldn't take the train, you think that group migrates to Arlington Heights? Easily.
More would migrate to Hammond, I suppose.
Okay, but I mean, either one, I have an issue with. I mean, Arlington Heights reminds me of like Detroit going to Pontiac. How'd that work out?
Well, you know, the park always did pretty well there.
Pontiac?
And that was a magnet. I'm not saying the Bears fan base and the Parks fan base overlapped all that much. But I mean, Arlington Heights is still a nice place to go to. I mean, it's prospering from what I was out there on Saturday. And it looks better every time I've been through it. So there's clearly money. There's clearly, you know, interest. The properties.
All right. The question on the table: are they looking for a new fan base, or are they taking the old one with them?
I think they want to keep as much of the old base as they can. That would just be smart, I would think, but. I don't know if they move to Hammond how many people are going to be making the trek from LaPorte, South Bend, or beyond to go to a Bears game. They don't think they know either. So,
well, if you're from near north, if you're from the, you know, the area where all the Chicago politicians that go to a lot of these skyboxes, if you're the high end dudes, if the people downtown, the companies that own the skybox, the law firms and ever, I'm going to say, you know, I drive around a lot, it's easier to get to Hammond than it is Arlington Heights.
It depends where you're coming from.
Like downtown. No comparison. If you live north, you know, river north, But I'm saying, is the group going to drive
you
to
Flint? Yeah, but if you live in Lake County or McHenry County,
I think
DuPage County, I just, you know.
I think the chances of you developing a new fan base are way higher in Arlington Heights. But the chance of dragging your old fan base with you, I don't think it's that good in either place. All of a sudden, the guy...
Have the Bears ever really cared about their fans?
Well, they care about people showing up in the skyboxes.
Well, they care about paying fans, but, you know, whether they're inconvenienced.
If all of a sudden the people paying $2,500 ticket takes them an hour and a half to get there versus 20 minutes, they don't care about that. They care if they don't show.
Right.
I'm saying Detroit tried that with Pontiac, right? And by the way, the Redskins tried it where they are, Redskins, the Commanders, and now they can't wait to get the stadium back in the city, right?
Well,
so does this presuppose, if somebody's dumb enough to do this in Arlington Heights or Hammond, that 15 years from now, if you and I are around and care, that now we're back looking at a downtown location because that one didn't work out, and it's another $5 billion. Or $10 billion at that time.
I would be perfectly happy if that didn't happen because we've been schnookered on all of these deals. So if they never come back to Chicago, it's perfectly okay with me.
Yeah, but you know they will.
Yeah.
Anyway, S&P futures down 28, NASDAQ futures down 100. To buy the dip is still in vogue. We're going to go to break. We'll come back with John and Audrey.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe, the very musically oriented Matt Byrne on the board. S&P futures down 28. NASDAQ futures down 100. Again, we're buying the dip here. Do we have Audrey?
We do indeed, yeah.
Oh, Nance. Uh-oh. I can have... We have Nance. Hey, good thing, because I was going to ask Audrey about you and John. As she sends me this email regarding... Weeds, dandelion greens support liver and gut health. So I was going to suggest to her that we, Audrey and me, invite Nancy and John over, and I'll cook up some dandelions, see how they like them.
That sounds
like such a great experience. I mean, who wouldn't want to eat a dandelion?
See,
they're delicious.
It shows your pampered upbringing, Nancy.
John and I'll bring something, and I'm sure it'll be the meal.
We used to have. They actually sell dandelions at like the stores that maybe you don't go to, being a higher end young lady. My grandfather used to go out and pick them for my grandmother to cook.
Yeah.
Now the trick is, according to my grandfather, I never went with them. You've got to pick them before they flower, right. Otherwise they're too bitter. But they're right on the same group as collard and mustard greens.
Arugula or lots of stuff.
Yeah, they're in there. They're right along. They can't be any bitterer than kale, can they, Jen?
Oh God.
Yeah, I mean it's. You got to boil them first, then you fry them up some olive oil and
garlic. I'll eat dandelions before I eat kale.
Yeah, I mean, you fry those suckers up with a little olive oil and garlic and hot pepper, and they're to die for, aren't they, Jen?
Yep.
You just don't want the flowers in there, because then they're real bitter. But anyway, we'll try them, see if you like them, Nance. You know, Audrey seems to be wanting to shove them off on somebody. I figured you two, maybe. Just saying.
Wait, we feel so special, don't we, Jen?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if
meal planning, yeah, this is.
We're going to help you with your liver and gut health. It's all positive. It's all positive.
And weed your garden at the same time.
Problem is, most people wait and see where the thing flowers. If you wait till then, it's too late. Just saying.
I'm reading about the bears now. You've got me so into this now.
Well, you're part of the studio audience. You don't care where they play. Or not the studio, you're the TV audience.
No, I'm just... I believe that people really want them to stay downtown because the downtown feel for... I'm talking about current fans now. Current fans that get to go. They like the downtown bars. They like the downtown feel. They like the skyline look. You know, the water. That's all part of it for them. And if you move them, you're definitely gonna lose that.
What if I were to say, now... Jen, you know, one of these days you'll actually meet Nancy when you come out of your place. Loving, caring, attractive lady. What if I were to say, hey, Nancy, you know, if we put this new stadium up there, wherever it is, you're going to get the contract to clean out the bathrooms. Are you positive? Or we're going to give you Nancy's hot dog stand. Are you positive for the new place or negative?
You know what? I'm really for the overall. I loved it when John said, "One of the beers ever heard about the fans."
Yeah,
it's me. Was like, "Oh my God, he really hit it at home." So I guess all this worrying doesn't really matter. I just think there's. I never thought of a new fan base, but I guess that's probably really time will happen.
Well, for the people watching on TV, it's no different. What's the difference? A road game, a home game?
You know what? When I sit at home, when I sit at home and watch the game, for the most part, I think about, wow, I wish I could be there to see this, okay? And if I ever decide to really go and, you know, pay a couple $1,000 for a ticket, I can still go. If you leave Chicago and go to Hammond, I just don't see myself ever dreaming that.
You're closer to Hammond.
I realize that. And I was just up in Wheeling yesterday, and I got to tell you, that was a... on the way up there, that drive was long. On the way home, I drove. It wasn't long anymore. But can you imagine the traffic? Holy, we don't have the infrastructure for Arlington Heights, I don't think.
What do you mean? There are going to be 5,000 people on 12 trains. Anybody believes that? I got something for them.
Yeah, okay. That's where I'm at. I just don't think so. And Hammond's not going to be any better.
Right across the street from the old racetrack, now a hole in the ground, is the courts. Rolling Ghettos, they call it, Jen?
Mm-hmm.
Name me an attorney, maybe you'll see some guys Wednesday night, that any time they have to go out there, it's the biggest pain in the ass there is to get out there. What is it, like an hour and a half from downtown? Have you got any kind of traffic?
No, about, I mean, well, for me, I come from Rolling Meadows. It's about half an hour with no traffic.
Okay.
With traffic, maybe about 40, 50.
All right, so if you left downtown right now, you could be in Arlington Park in 40 minutes. I'll take the over. You're not near as far as Arlington Park.
I'm just around Arlington Park. I'm really only about maybe like 5 minutes at most.
Yeah, that's the suburb next door. That's the next door suburb.
Right? Rolling Meadows is farther out, right, Madison?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, you know, Rolling Meadows is, you know, packed up right next to the court, and the court is maybe, what, like that's like maybe a minute drive away from Arlington Park, you know, a station.
Well, my buddy Bill has had a couple of escapades coming back from there at 3:30 in the afternoon, where he's made it to the bar by like 5:30. You know, with the traffic coming in and so forth.
With traffic, yeah, it can be kind of rough, especially around rush hour.
I mean, I just don't know that it's a destination spot for. I mean, is it closer than Pontiac, Jen? I think Pontiac might be a little further. Is it about the same?
Yeah, I've driven that a couple times. You know, from Detroit to Pontiac, and I don't think it's as close as, you know, Arlington Heights is.
Whatever, but that was a fiasco, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, anyway, Nance, what's going on in the? Everybody keeps hoping for these interest rates to come flying down, and yet they sort of aren't. We're really stuck at this 4.3 in the 10-year. Looks like they're going up, and they don't. They come back, and we got the 30-year at 4.9. So I don't see mortgages down to 4 anytime soon. Here, to you?
No, if we, you know, if the Iran thing wouldn't have happened, I think we could have had a chance of getting there. I think we were right towards the cusp of it moving, and I think we're here for a while now.
What's the number? Are we 7 or are we under?
I have no idea, but I was hoping if it went to 3.95, that kind of was my target, that you could maybe see a downward spiral where we would definitely be in the 5s. But it just, we were so close, and we were at 3.97 on that Friday, and then on Saturday we had the bombing, and Monday morning the market went nuts, and I think we were at, you know, we were over 4.1. It's been, you know, then we were.
You're
just
talking
on
the 10-year. Where did the mortgage get down to? You're right, the 10-year.
They were, you know, you could if you really had everything, you know, everything lined up, you could have been at like 5.99, 5.875, right in there.
Really?
Okay. But yeah, you were really close. I mean, it was anywhere, you know, the spread was anywhere from 5.875 to about 6.5, depending on where your credit was and the income, because we have the Biden thing where if you make more, you know, you got to give to those who have less. So it just, it's a thing now.
Yeah,
so
what a horrible idea that is.
Yeah, and then you got to look what the average median is, because the Biden thing isn't just a straight statement. It's a kind of like a formula algorithm thing. So, I mean, you could get there, but now there's just no way. Now there's just no way.
If I go, okay, enough with the rental, I'm going to go buy a house, and I come to you and say, it looks like I'm buying something in the, you know, what's the average, 412. I'm going to buy the average house. The average guy buying the average house, I show you all my financials, and you go, okay, you qualify for, well, 20% down, which nobody does. Suppose I put 20% down, I'm talking, my mortgage is going to be 330. So, okay, mm-hmm. You say, all right, you're qualified, and so I probably pick a realtor. I pick Audrey, I think. Got her else, I get my throat slit, but I'll pick Audrey. And so now when... I do it because she does the best job, by the way. So so now I'm looking for a place. Now it goes into a bidding war and all. When do I actually get my? When do I know my rate? I mean, right? I mean, I know it's
the day you lock.
The day you lock. So I don't
it's
get
the
it.
The day you know your rate. You don't. It doesn't matter what. It doesn't matter until you lock. I mean, and the right now, they can change 5 times a day.
So what if I said it's going to take me 2 months to buy a house? And what's today's rate? 7? Let's say it's 7.
Okay, let's just say it's 7.
Okay, so what if I say, all right, Nance, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to bust my behind to find some place. Audrey's going to show me 30 places like she does people. And it could be July. I want to lock this 7 in July, because I don't want to be busting my ass and find out when I find a place, now it's 8 and I can't afford it. What can I
Well, because I pre-qualify you. If the rate is 7, then I know that I pre-qualify you at 8. So that I don't have to worry about that. And then,
yeah, but I'm the one who's going to worry about it. I can't afford the other percent. What if I want? What if I want to lock it at 7?
You can.
I just got to pay for it
to an unknown property. You got to pay for it. But here's the thing, it isn't necessarily the, you know, you think the worst is the rate. It's not. It's where you're going to buy. What are the taxes?
Right.
Well, that's true.
Really the biggest piece to this puzzle is. I tell people, okay, tax bill cannot be over this if you want to do this. Because some of these taxes are just crazy. I talked to somebody who lives in, was it Park Forest? No.
Well, Park Forest is horrible. So is,
I think it was Park Forest. And their house is worth $130,000. They're paying $14,000 in taxes.
Well, you
and you heard it here first.
Well, you remember
what was that's nuts.
Yes, what was the place? This is a couple of years ago, so I can mention it. What was selling in Chicago Heights? It was like the house was like
It was Chicago Heights that this was in. Well, there was this, it was Chicago Heights, and it was. The guy has said I have to get out. And I'm like, oh my God, who's going to buy this with a $14,000 tax bill?
Well, I didn't want to go in by herself, so I drove her. Not that I'm Kung Fu Chief or anything like that, or I'm not armed, but I drive her out there. She's on this block. I think the house was, Nancy, your memory's better than me. Was it 70 grand and the guy's tax bill was 8,000? It was like, well, it was like it double as more.
Because I just had this, and so I said to the realtor, okay, how much? Now you got another problem because you gotta find out what do you think in all reality in that area, what is this house going to sell for? Because the appreciation I have to know, because how much are they going to put down in the next house and how much room, wiggle room do we have? Well, I mean, it's just a never-ending I mean, you could spend 3 or 4 hours on these things now just trying to figure out, is the guy really going to succeed, or are you just going to, you know, if they go online or they call like a, you know, a bigger company, like Loan Depot, or, you know, or even if you just get someone in a bank, they're just going to tell you qualify. They're not going to tell you, gee, this is, you're going to have a, it's not that you're going to have a hard time selling it. You're just not going to get what you want because look what they have to figure in for the tax payment.
Well, that's when I was, when we were all Utes, you'd see the Utes. Did he say Ute? We were all Utes. If you look at the classiest places to live in Illinois, I'm going to say number one was always Kenilworth. Then it toyed back and forth between Winnetka and Flossmoor. I'm talking, you know, in the 60s. The housing stock in Flossmoor is spectacular. You can buy one of those houses now for, I'm going to say, 300 grand that you couldn't duplicate for 2 mil, and the taxes are what, 50? It's
no, the taxes, you're right, though, they're very high. Home and Flossmoor is another area that's, and you know, that's not my jam, like where I'm out in that area. But when I was out there for a couple different things, okay, reasons, and I have to tell you, that was. It was beautiful.
Oh yeah, you got great train service. You got great train service. You got everything. If there were six country clubs down there, I mean, Washington Park.
It puts Beverly to shame.
When you see, you know how beautiful Arlington Park was, the track that's now down. Washington Park did way more business than Arlington, didn't it, John?
Yeah.
Was that 167th and Halsted? I was there.
Was that the other place?
Yeah.
That was the other track?
Yeah, I was.
I did not know that.
Nance, I went there.
To both.
Nance, I went there, and I was in college. My parents wanted to go. We went on a Sunday. You didn't have to pay admission if you only got in after, like, the fifth race. I won 4 races in a row, you know, betting $2. So I made, like, 150. I never seen anything like it. That night, guess what happened?
I don't
know.
Was
that when the park burned down?
That was the night they torched it. I don't think I've had a wedding day at the track since. It was how long ago? anyway, but I mean, what? How do they expect people to pay this stuff?
I don't know. I was in awe. I mean, I really felt for this family, and I had one possible solution, and the guy didn't want to do it. And I'm like, there's nothing more to be done. So I don't know whatever happened to that, but the shock of it all. But to me, the rate is not the issue as much anymore.
Well, I mean, just a little bit of history at Chicago Heights. My uncle and my grandmother used to live out there. Serious Italian community, not anymore. All kinds of industry. They had some huge mall. All that stuff's closed. And then, so the money just gets divvied among the people that are left, right? Isn't that the way the taxes work, unfortunately? They have a home in Flossmoor is a school, right? Isn't it, Chad?
Yeah, and there was tons of industry in Chicago Heights, and
was there?
Oh yeah,
oh yeah. It was
what was there?
Railroad Junction. There was all this light industry. There was, you can see vestiges of this in Harvey and places like that too. Just hollowed out, structures that at one time were, they could would have been like a steel mill. I mean, there were steel mills out there too.
Yeah,
and it vanished. You know, there's downtown Chicago Heights now. You can't even really find it.
Three or four of the best Italian restaurants ever were there.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I taught. And I was amazed at what, it was a city. I mean, it was not like a suburb. It had a very definitely urban feel to it, but it was just now on the skids because everything had shut down, vacant storefronts everywhere. And, at one time, this was a densely populated area with lots of restaurants and the things
that made
life livable.
Let's put the stadium there.
Well, that's a thought. They had pretty much a world class hospital. Is it even open, Jen?
Well, it's been was St. James Hospital. Now it's been, I don't know if it's Francis. It's been taken up by the conglomerate.
It's
I think they
tore
down the old hospital.
Yeah,
Prime. It's going to Prime Hospital May 1st. Yeah. That I do know.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I was out there with Otto, and I couldn't believe the place. That was like 2 years ago. Anyway, so, I mean, we were talking earlier in the show, the difference between, I mean, obviously you're aware because you're doing some of the mortgage stuff for the people that Otto have been working on, that these bidding wars for these houses, I was mentioning to John and Jimmy that it's not people that are 35 years old that are married and have their second kid and maybe even they're both still working. They're not bidding on these places. The only people that are bidding on it are people that are selling the house they're now in, and it's just a trade, or they have some kind of parent money or something. A guy and a lady who are just worker bees aren't bidding up 40, 50, 60 grand on these houses, I don't think, are they? In general. I'm not that it doesn't happen, but...
It does happen, but it just depends on where it's located and stuff like that, but... for the most part, when this new thing starts, and if it starts rolling, the worker bee people can't really do it.
No,
can't really do it because if they don't appraise out, you have to come up with the cash between the appraised price and what you're going to pay, and that gets really dicey.
Well, that's
that knocks a ton of people out.
Not to go into if you've got. A younger couple, say they're 30, maybe have their first kid, which is a big investment. They both have some student loans, have some savings, but not a hell of a lot, because a lot of that's going to the student loans, and they're making combined, say, 200, give them a real number, or 175, but they both have $1,000 a month check to their student loans. What can they afford? How high can they go?
It's not how high they can go, it's what they can, how much cash do they have? And so many of the younger people live on a paycheck to paycheck budget.
Is that because of student loan? I mean, I know the guys were kind of always like that. If you got it, what if the guy who owns a Tripoli tap, say Jimmy, the Nick, I spent 90% of my money in. And fast card, women, and booze, the other 10% I wasted?
Yep.
Oh, you're kidding.
Now, Nance, if you were one of the ladies, you'd probably think that was a good investment, right?
No.
Well,
it doesn't really matter the age group anymore. It really matters on... it just so happens this week has been very unusual because there really is nothing... The inventory is very low, okay? Because, number one, the average person who already owes something somewhere is between 2 to 4. And now they're not going to be there. So that's a big increase, right? And it just seems this past week, Audrey has had a lot of... the inquiries are coming from the older generation to get where they need to be. They realize they're not maybe in the right spot. They tried something, and it didn't
25
work.
Steps don't cut it anymore?
That's really it.
Yeah.
And ranches are extremely difficult to find right now. They're in high demand, and they're just extremely difficult to find.
That's because there aren't very many of them.
So, correct. There just isn't, because it's not as economical to build a ranch as it is...
For those who don't know what we're talking about, a ranch means...
You know, a tri-level, just a basic tri-level.
For what we're talking about, a ranch means your living room, dining room, bedroom, all that stuff is all in one level. You don't have to go up and down stairs. Which if you're older, or if you somehow broke your leg playing badminton or something, it's a good idea. Stairs are not good. But there's not very many of them.
And that's... They just aren't. And because their footprint is usually, you know, much... bigger, like we're a Chicago style ranch where everything really is on one floor, and then they have their basement. I mean, those are 30 feet wide, 35 feet wide, and then they go way back. Okay,
try 25, 25 in my area.
Yeah, so in the suburbs, the idea was it'll get bigger or whatever. So the lots out here are about 65, but. It's much easier just to build multiple levels, and people really liked that. I mean, they did. It was the style for a long time, especially in the baby boomer generation. And there's so many of those that's what's out there. And now the baby boomers are kind of like the senior boomers, and you have ailments and stuff like that, and just don't want the stairs anymore.
Is that what you think,
John? Another hazard.
So you think John is a senior boomer?
Boomer? No. What I found out yesterday, we had a silent... they've been naming these generations forever, and we had a silent generation. God, they had all these names. It was crazy. Crazy. They've been doing it since 1883.
I like that senior boomer, though. I like that. No, every time I think of John, I'm going to think of a senior boomer.
I'm just calling the befuddled generation.
Befuddled? No, they told me there was baby boomer A and baby boomer B, and what was I? And I said, what are you talking about, baby boomer A and B? By the way, that is not a thing.
No, the boomers were all the way to when? You were born, what, 50?
64, I think.
54, yeah.
Boomers went to 64.
64.
Boomers went to 64 because we looked it up, and then... the generation after the war was the silent generation. It was really interesting because we were laughing our heads off. I said, "What?" And these what I would consider kids, but they were Gen X or something like that, or millennials. I'm not sure.
When you say war, you mean the war to end all wars, World War One, or which war are you talking about? We had a lot,
World
30
war
of
two,
them.
Two.
We had like
World
30 of them. How many have we had in our lifetime?
World War Two.
We had about seven in our lifetime now, right?
I ran out of fingers and toes a long time ago.
Yeah. All right, so Nance...
But we haven't had any wars in our lifetime. What are you talking about? These are just little conflicts.
Oh, we got our just police actions or something. Kind of crazy. Hey, so what... I have to ask, since it's my job to worry on the money management part. I always have to ask, my clients, in my own mind, I'll sit there and go, okay, how does this guy look life-wise if his portfolio is down 40%, which is, of course, with me managing it, I will say that
would never happen.
That would never happen. But never is a long time, right?
That's correct.
It could happen between the time the guy says, I want to use you, and the time the stock gets here. It could, all kinds of bad crap could happen, right, Nancy? I mean, you never know.
This is correct.
But
this is correct.
But by and large, that's what I protect against. But what has happened to the world if there is a 30% correction in both the market and real estate price? How many people has that put out? Because you're talking about 5 or 10% down.
I don't think it puts out anybody because nobody can really move.
Well,
so
I mean,
none of that really matters, and you can buy a home now with 3% down.
Well,
I don't think people really care. They just figure, put it in my mortgage, and it's no big deal. As long as their monthly cash flow works, they don't care.
Well, you're
there are no savings left anymore, Tom. The savings account is your house.
Well, that's. You just hit on what has me so amazingly concerned. Somebody scrapes together $40,000 to buy the $410,000 house we were arguing about earlier, what the median rate is. All of a sudden, that house is $350,000. Okay, you're not going to move. You're still going to make your mortgage. God help you if you get transferred, because your equity is now gone. It's a balance sheet scrub. It's not laid off for 3 weeks. It's all of a sudden the thing you saved up for, or your inheritance, is now gone. This is what happened in 2007, 2008. Why have we forgotten that so quickly? Because it came back? It didn't. How many people had to leave their house and it came back for the next guy, not for them, right?
2007, 2008 got complicated.
Yeah.
Because so many people jumped on the bandwagon just so that they could get a reduced rate in their mortgage. And that is not... You know, that might have sounded good, and people thought that, the next guy was doing this, getting away with this, so I have to jump on the bandwagon, I can get my rate reduced, it'll cost me less. We don't know what the consequences of all that are. They don't know what the consequences of all that are. I do. They don't.
Yeah, well, it's... You see the same thing in the stock world. I mean, you know, when I say clients, we have all kinds of people that trade through PTI. I mean, people I handle, people my brother handles, which kind of already together. Then we have people that just buy and sell on interactive brokers, and they might buy a stock and borrow money for it. But the weird part is you can say if somebody goes out on margin, which people do on a house, right? It's like the ultimate margin. It's like 80% or more, like you're saying, 90%. If somebody does that, and say somebody buys... Apple. Now, Apple's been one of the best performers ever for people. It's been a life changer. Somebody comes in tomorrow, which, you know, wouldn't, if they talked to us, we probably would at least say it's not a great idea. But you come on our online platform and you could buy 2,000 shares of Apple. It's trading 270. So you got to put up $270,000. You don't put up the whole 540. So you put up half of it. And all of a sudden, say Apple drops to 200. And that person is obliterated. He's out. He cashes out. He lost, you know, big chunk of his money. And all of a sudden, Apple comes back to 270. I mean, you can say that everybody's whole again. That guy's not. Same way in 2007, 2008. We're talking about 235 on houses. Went down to 175. You got transferred. You blew the house out at 175. You lost your entire down payment, which is either money you and your wife saved up or your money your mom and dad gave you. You're not getting that back. You have no ability to buy a new house. Now the house is back to 350. You can say everything's okay again. The house is back to 350, but your guy is not okay, is he? Like, my guy's not okay. It's very individual. You got to be careful when you look at just, not saying you two ever would, but you got to be careful saying, the market was 1,000, it went to 500, now it's back to 1,000, everybody's okay. Everybody's not exactly the descriptive word here, is it, Jen?
No. My worry, too, from what you were saying a little while ago, Nancy, is even if there were a major correction in house prices, I don't think that's going to mean a lot of people are all of a sudden now coming into the market, because there isn't going to be an equivalent collapse in, you know, tax bills or in, you know, maintenance fees or homeowners associations or insurance premiums. At least not for a while. So it isn't like people are all of a sudden able to afford a house now because the price has collapsed. it's going to be, you know, the other factors that maybe will take a longer time to collapse or will continue to go up, maybe more likely. So I don't know that even a correction is going to make it, you know, easier for people to come into the real estate market now.
Yes, John, you're bringing up a really good point, because the God, I got a woman that lives in Chicago on maybe Maryland. And
where's that, east side?
Spanish
Grove, yes.
63rd in Maryland?
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And her mortgage payment went up, and I got the referral through a lawyer, and the lawyer called me and said, please just help this lady. I mean, there's nothing in it for me at all, okay? I spent more time with this woman, and you know what it is? I got down to the bottom of it. It's her insurance bill. Her house is worth $135,000. She's paying $4,800 for homeowner's insurance.
Wow.
I was like, what is this? That's where the, you know, when I finally unraveled this whole thing, that's where it went wrong way back, okay? And that's why her monthly bill keeps going up, because they're trying to make up for the deficit of what they thought the bill would be, like, you know, $1,200, okay?
She's also paying, what would you guess? We got a dash here, but she's paying $130,000. That obviously includes a lot. What do you, if all of a sudden the thing burned to the ground, which I'm sure is all not open, what's the replacement cost? $250,000?
Oh, the replacement cost is like $280,000 or something like that. Yeah. That's where all this thing got. It was really complicated, but it got really unraveled. When it gets unraveled, she just can't insure it for a full replacement value, and the bill is going to go down to about $2,000. But I couldn't believe it. So like I said, right now for me, with everything I'm finding, it's really even not the rate anymore. You can kind of push that off to the side, which used to always be the number one thing. It's this replacement value on what's it going to cost to rebuild it. And I'd say the average person now is going to start paying about $2,000 bottom line for your house insurance, and it may not replace the whole thing.
Well, the final
Illinois is rated the worst out of all the states. Like, they take California out of the picture, they take Texas out, and they take Florida out. We're number one on the 47.
That's unreal.
Because of these storms we're getting, because of the roofs that were replaced in siding.
Well,
so we're going to carry the premiums. That's what this is about.
Is my buddy, he's a remodeler, big, you know, pretty big time, Rob, I won't say his last name, said, "Hey, Chief, that's why you never remodel an $80,000 house as opposed to a $500,000 house. The plasterboard costs just as much in the $80,000 house as it does in the $1 million house."
Right.
It's scary, isn't it? But it's true.
Yeah.
I was shocked.
Yeah. Well, Nancy, as usual.
So when are you having us over for these dandelions?
I will cook some, and then we can try them. I'll go buy.
I know you got to pick a date. Well, I got to actually meet John. I want to see the car roll in the driveway.
Yep, his new car.
Yeah.
I'm thinking if not all else fails, it'll be the apple picking thing, right? Or the
we can't wait. We can't wait till then. Besides, John. Actually, he and I didn't do any work. We cooked, but John sat there all. He didn't man the press.
I give moral support to the people, you know, grinding the apples.
Yeah. And we, God.
I witnessed that.
Yeah, Jimmy was there. SP Futures down 20, NASDAQ Futures down 51. I'm going to guess, this is not market prognostication, that we make it positive today, even though we opened up huge last night with the problems in the Middle East. I'm sure the Fed's buying and pouring money in. That's another story for another day. Thanks, guys. Good job. Nance, maybe I'll see you this week.
Yeah.
You know, I hear... you guys had a big party Friday, the night before I went down there. Or was it Thursday you guys went out? Whatever night I'm not there, there's a big party.
Oh, it was Friday.
Yeah, see?
Friday. Audrey didn't come. That's why I was confused. Okay.
All right, well, we're back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
All right, bye.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.